Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and co-parents of all ages, this podcast is for you. Introducing in the center ring, the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel.
Joining me in center ring today is a guest that I'm thrilled to have. His name is John Natchlinger. John is the founder and head coach of Divorce Shield. I found him on Instagram, which for me is an absolute wealth of divorce information. I love the fact that John has a coaching company and a podcast strictly devoted to men. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Judith, for having me.
Okay, so I love this more than anything. First of all, I'm always worried, even on my own podcast, that people will think I'm female-focused because I'm a female, and I'm not. I'm human being-focused. I want everybody to do the best job they can to have the most amicable divorce possible. But I do see, even in my own divorce practice, that men are really scared, and they're afraid of the big-ticket things. Losing custody of their children, especially if they're a very nurturing man, and there are very nurturing men out there. And then financially, they're afraid of just losing their lives in the divorce. So are these some of the reasons why you got into the coaching business and dedicated yourself to men?
Yes. So I've been a divorce attorney for almost 18 years. And in doing that, it became readily evident to me that men don't have the same level of resources that women do, or at least there's a perception to men that there's not resources out there for them. A lot of the divorce coaches that are out there, a lot of the podcasts, a lot of the videos are women talking to men. And a lot of men, there is not a lot of men talking to men about these issues. And there's something about a lot of guys that they really need another man to tell them that it's going to be okay. They need another man to tell them it's all going to be all right. Because they already have the perception that they're going to get screwed. A lot of men do anyway. And just having a woman tell them these things, there are a lot of men out there that it's not going to resonate the same way. So seeing all of that, I decided that the best way for me to take my experience, I mean, I've handled over 1,500 divorce and family law matters in my career, and take my experience to sort of guide these guys, not from a legal perspective, but really to guide them from much more of a practical expectation, it's going to be okay perspective. And that's really where the genesis of this came from, because to be honest, Judith, I've gotten sick of actually being a divorce attorney, because once people come into your office as an attorney, the facts are the facts. You can't change their life. You can't change the relationship with their kids. You can't change how much money they make. You can't change, you know, whether or not their partner has not worked in, you know, 15, 20 years. You can't change any of those things. So in order for someone to have an amicable divorce, which is why I love the name of your podcast, in order for them to have an amicable divorce, you really need to get their mind in the right place. And so that they're not, you know, feeling like a victim when they go into the divorce process.
That's right. And defensive. And they shouldn't, but they do. Well, everybody does to a certain extent, right?
Yeah, everyone does.
I mean, it's so fearful. You really never know how things are going to come out. I like the fact, though, that you are also an attorney, because you've been there, done that. You've seen so many things. And there's a level of comfort, I think, that you have been an attorney. You will always be an attorney if you keep your bar relationship up. So I think that means something. But then you put on the coaching and the mentoring hat, and that really fills the void that I agree with you. It's out there. There was something else, and I told you this when we first talked, and the reason that motivated me to call you as I followed you on Instagram, and that was I love the way men talk. there is quite a difference between the way women communicate and men communicate. Women will talk around a subject forever and eventually get to the point. Men are very short, concise, to the point, and I think I have a lot of male in me. You also talk like there's some things, and we're going to read a lot of this that I looked at what you offer, and I want to make sure that we get to everything for our audience. But you kind of talk in sports terms a little bit, which I adore because I love football. This is a really important day to have this conversation. I want to start with custody. Because in the news today, Brad Pitt has gone to the California Supreme Court to deal with custody. So the Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie divorce has been going on since 2016. I mean, the custody portion has been going on. I uploaded an episode in the Celebrity Divorce series last week, and we talked about custody, how it was being dealt with in their divorce, and then we just opened it up in general. And so Brad apparently had to go to classes for anger management, alcohol, marijuana, because Angelina filed for domestic violence charges the day after this documented plane incident where Brad hit one of his kids. Okay. It looked like Brad went through all the right steps to now enjoy joint custody. But can you please open up the discussion of custody and what men say when they come into your office for coaching?
It's interesting, Judith. A lot of men just have a very baseline fear, which is that my kids are going to get taken away from me. Which you and I both know, kids are never taken away from you. It's all a matter of, well, I would say in most situations, kids are not being taken away from you. It's really a matter of how much time are they with mom, how much time are they with dad, or how much time are they with mom and mom or dad and dad. And really, there's just this fear that their kids are going to get totally taken away because, you know, because maybe they do drink a little bit more than they think they should, or because they're afraid that there's going to be allegations that they're abusive. Whatever the case is, they just have this fear. And so that fear is easily dealt with being direct. And that, to your point earlier, men do need directness. They don't need things sugar-coated. They just need to be told, here's how it is. You can trust me that your kids are not getting taken away from you. So once they recognize that it's not a matter of kids getting taken away, it's just a matter of how much time are they going to be with each parent, it really changes the dynamic in someone's head. Because then I can help them understand that it's not even about the parents anymore. It's about the children. And it's about, you know, you work, your, you know, soon-to-be ex works, maybe doesn't work. You've got a schedule. Your kids have a schedule. Let's just be practical of where they're going to be. And once you put it in those terms, and it's not about winning and losing and, you know, the court being punitive against you because you're a man, because that's the perception, then it really allows you to see the forest from the trees and really proceed forward in a way that's a lot healthier than the way that they come into the office.
What should men say or do when they hear from their wives? A couple things. You're never going to see the kids. You didn't see them anyway when you were here and we were together. So any judge is going to understand that they should totally be with me. And then the other thing would be very small children, infants, maybe up to one and a half-ish, breastfeeding. The perception from women is, of course, I'm going to keep the child all the time. I'm breastfeeding. And I don't know how different New Jersey courts are from California, but no, the breastfeeding doesn't hold weight, unfortunately, for women. And they go into this attachment theory argument that women have to have the initial bonding and attachment, and they do it physically. How do you deal with this? Because I'm sure you hear it, don't you?
I absolutely do. Well, for the first part of that, the threats, it can be so hard to tell somebody, just ignore what you're hearing at home. But that's unfortunately what has to happen. And the guys that I'm coaching, I just tell them, if your wife says something like that to you, call me and let's talk. Just ignore her. Don't say anything back to her. And, you know, that's very effective a lot of times, just because, again, it's getting out of your own head. It's getting your mindset in the right place to not proceed out of fear, because that's what people are trying to do, just make you fearful of what's going to happen. So once I can get somebody to ignore their spouse, and this, by the way, goes through divorce too. During a divorce, people are making threats. You know, if you don't do this, I'm going to ask for this amount of alimony. If you don't do that. So you really just have to step back, take a deep breath, and just remember that you are going to professionals, whether they be coaches, lawyers, mediators, whoever it is. And what your spouse wants and thinks and what their opinion is really irrelevant. And most of the time they're saying it just to upset you. But you go to the small kids part of this. This is really near and dear to my heart. So I have an 8-year-old, so I had a very young one not that long ago. And I'm not sure if we discussed this earlier or not, Judith, but it's a very interesting situation in that I am gay. So I am married to another man. So there were two men raising a baby. So when this was all going on, and I had a lot of cases as an attorney going into the courtroom, and I had mothers saying, oh no, only I can raise the child because my husband doesn't know how to put the diapers on the baby, or my husband doesn't know the feeding schedule. I took it personally, and there are probably some transcripts out there of me borderline yelling in courtrooms because under that philosophy, my daughter should have, you know, not survived being a baby because there were two men doing everything instead of one.
Oh my God, what an excellent point. Yeah.
Yeah. So I will tell you this, it doesn't matter whether they're breastfeeding or not. Most women of young that have young children, and I think under one's a good age to make this a point. It doesn't matter whether they're breastfeeding or not. It doesn't matter whether they're working full-time or not. It doesn't matter whether their parents are, their mother is helping them provide care for the child or not. Almost always they have the perception, and it's grounded in our history, right? Because it wasn't that long ago we had this primary caretaking philosophy where, you know, children should stay with mom. But because of all of that, they just believe the children are going to be with them. And whenever they find out that's not the case, women go into defensive mode. And so I think it sort of scares the fathers because, you know, you do a mediation, and a lot of times people agree to things in part because they're afraid of what might happen if they don't agree to it. You know, like sometimes people will get convinced that I have to agree to this because if I don't, I go to court, it could be a lot worse. And that's all because you don't have the right mindset. That's all because you have allowed somebody else to convince you of what's going to happen. Because we all know one thing, none of us know what a judge will ever do. And that's what I tell my coaching clients. Any attorney who tells you, the judge is going to do this, and they can tell you with 100% certainty, they are full of it. Because we don't know. We don't know how a judge is going to feel. We don't know what facts are going to come out. We don't know what the circumstances are going to be at that point in the future when you're even before a judge. So to some degree, this all goes back to the first part of your question, which is just ignore your spouse. You have to ignore them. And you know, obviously, we're not talking so much about our mediation clients because in a lot of cases, they're hopefully not making those kinds of comments because that's really contrary to the ideas of mediation. But you know, if you're in active litigation or you have a spouse that really wants to play hardball, it's imperative you just ignore what they're saying and listen to these professionals that hopefully you're surrounding yourself with.
Right. And I use the movie Kramer versus Kramer as kind of a definitive point in our culture because that movie was the first time, I think it was based on a true story, was the first time a man got full legal and physical custody of their child because, played by Dustin Hoffman, Meryl Streep playing the mother, left. That was very unusual. women don't generally leave. I mean, I've had a few women that did leave, but it is not the case. Generally, the man moves out of the house and it's decided that that will happen. But, you know, I have that poster in my office and I always point to that. If I have people here, just say, no, watch this film. This was groundbreaking. This kind of changed the game a lot. But again, to your point with judges, no, of course, nobody knows what a judge will say, even to the point of making crazy decisions that everybody in the courtroom is in shock. You know, you'll have a tough case, very litigated, minor's counsel, therapists, all giving testimony why one parent may really be unfit. And it could easily be mom. And all of a sudden, mom gets at least half the amount of time, if not more. And you could hear the wind go out of the entire courtroom. And John, just so people don't freak out if that happens, people do have the option to challenge those decisions, don't they, in court?
They do. And I will tell you, Judith, most of the time, this isn't really about fitness. Because I would say of, you know, my entire career, there have only been a handful of parents that were unfit. And unfit, of course, means you're actually abusing your kids or you're under the influence of something that makes you unable to properly care for them. Most of the time, arguments revolve around just straight up, you don't know the children the way I do, or, you know, you don't know the children's schedules the way I do, or, you know, the children don't want to be with you. It's much more of those arguments than the unfitness arguments. Because if you're unfit, I think we all would agree if you're legitimately unfit, the children should not be with you until you get the proper level of help. You know, for example, you were talking about Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. I don't know if he actually had an issue that was absolutely made him unfit or not. But guess what? A lot of times men and women are forced into doing anger management, treatment programs, whatever the case is, just to placate a judge, just so that they feel, okay, you did something, whether or not you needed to or not, it's beside the point, you did something. And so a lot of times people just do those things, whether or not they did what was wrong. It's similar to a guilty plea. You know, someone who didn't commit a crime still might take a guilty plea just because, you know, the consequences of not doing so might just scare them more than taking the plea. So, you know, it's really difficult when you enter custody because a lot of times everyone is just doing things out of fear, and a lot of women feel empowered to make demands because they have the perception that judges are going to be with them. You know, when they see the way my husband is, they're going to side with me. When they hear my story, when they talk to the kids, there's no way he's going to get custody. And so you've got women who, by and large, feel empowered. You've got men, by and large, that are feeling scared. And so it's no wonder that the custody cycle perpetuates the way it does, with more women having primary custody of children than men, because that's where a lot of people come into the process. And let's be honest, a lot of people still look back to their parents. And if they were divorced, almost always, mothers got custody of their kids, you know, 30 years ago. So it's this cycle that just continues, which is why a lot of states, including New Jersey, where I am a licensed attorney, there is a movement affront to create laws that create presumptions of 50-50 shared residential custody as a presumption, so that men aren't feeling like they have to prove themselves to get maybe a custody order that's in the best interest of the children.
I really like that. I think that's great. To the starting point being equal, and then you work out from there. You know, something that is always a discussion in mediation when you're looking at the co-parenting schedule, and that is, to the father, well, look, I mean, you work very long hours, and he makes very good money, and he works very long hours. And I mean, I'm in Los Angeles, so we're in the type A capital of the world with the entertainment industry. And if you want to make a lot of money, you're out. But the interesting part of that is, even though you're out a lot and you have children, you do come home at night. So there's that presence and that energy of dad is going to be there. Dad, we will wake up and dad will more than likely be there, at least in the morning. We'll get to see him. And so we know his presence is there. And dad knows that he will get to see his children when he gets home and in the morning, and therefore works to provide a very good future, present and future, for the kids. So now you're at the point of divorce and you've got to look at what this co-parenting schedule looks like. And I have found, and I'd like you to share your experience, I have found that men who really want to be in their children's lives will figure out a different schedule somehow, some way. Maybe it won't be 50-50. Maybe it will be a little less than that, but it will be time dedicated to them because they want it. How do you deal with that aspect of this change where people's schedules simply have to change to accommodate two households?
Well, it's interesting, Judith, that so many people don't recognize that, you know, post-divorce life is very different than marital life. And they always want to extrapolate what life is going to be like after the divorce from what happened during the marriage. And it's just not fair on any account. I mean, you talk about money. Obviously, I always say you're taking one heart. Now you've got two hearts trying to use the same blood supply after people are divorced. People just aren't in reality. And to your points, people arrange their marriages in such a way where maybe while children are young, maybe mom stays home with them until they get into school and then dad's out there working. But you know, after the divorce happens, people lose sight of the fact, and I've said this already today, they lose sight of the fact that it's about the children. It's not about them. And you know, depending on the age of the kids, as you know, the younger the kids are, the more important it is for them to have frequent contact with both parents. Otherwise, they're never going to build those parental bonds as they get older. Once they become teenagers, it's a little bit different because their schedules sort of take the front seat at that point, particularly your kids, the teenagers that are really involved in extracurriculars or they're really into academics, whatever the case is. They're less likely to want to go back and forth. But I would just say, in general, people need to be open and creative to solutions. And in fact, that's, as a mediator, as I do mediate quite a bit, that's where I start from, is I don't even like the term joint, sole, residential, physical. I don't like any of those types of custody. I say, we're not going to label anything. Let's take out a calendar. Let's figure out, what can we do? Can it be different during the school year than it can during the summer? Can we give one parent, you know, all of the big breaks where during the school weeks, it's a little bit different? It really requires parents to be creative and come up with a solution that's good for the kids and allows both parents to still be able to work and provide for the kids. People think it's one or the other, and there is always a way to accomplish both. But you have to be open to it. You have to have the right mindset going in that we are going to do what's best for the kids, no matter how many times, you know, this person cheated on me or how many times this person yelled at me, whatever. You're getting divorced. You're not going to live with this person anymore. You still have these kids. Let's figure it out. And people lose sight of the fact that you can come up with creative solutions because they've all been told somebody has custody, somebody doesn't. And that is literally the starting point, not the ending point.
Yeah, I like that you start with the calendar And let's look at what the children's schedule is first. So different ages, different schedules. And what you decide on for your settlement agreement is going to change as the kids get older if you're dealing with smaller children. And then when there's teenagers, you might never see them except to pay the car insurance and the note on the car and give them some gas money. They're off and running on their own. But yes, if you start with the calendar first and put the children's schedules down. Now, let's look at your schedules, mom and dad. How do your schedules support your child's schedule? It becomes an entirely different conversation. So I completely agree with you on that. I really do. And, you know, it's really sweet. And I don't think I'm throwing women under the bus. I hope women are comforted by what I'm going to say. But I think it's really sweet when a father is passionate about being with his children. And I've seen men start to cry in mediations, just having the discussion. Well, you can come and visit after work and you can say goodnight to them, but you can't have them stay overnight for a couple more years. I've seen men become very emotional over this. And then I look at the women and say, this is what you want. You want somebody who's emotional over the fact they can't see their children. Hopefully they will be comforted. It takes a little bit of work.
It does take some work. Going into mediation, which is what I advocate everybody should start with, and I'm sure you do too. Mediation is just a much healthier environment to create a solution that's good for everybody. But people just, when they get into the litigation, it becomes a win and lose proposition. I always tell people, once it becomes John versus Jane or Jane versus John, all of a sudden you're trying to win as opposed to just trying to find a creative solution that's going to help your family. And that's really what it's about, is trying to figure out what's good for the family. I'll tell you, I just did a mediation not too long ago where mom was alleging all kinds of things about dad, didn't think that he could handle the kids. So instead of trying to fight that fight of dad wants this kind of parenting time, mom wants this kind of parenting time, I just convinced dad that, okay, let's do a phase in, but over just like 4 or 5 months, and just gave you more and more time so that mom can see you're not this monster that she's made you out in her head to be. And so that was easier to sell it on mom because mom was convinced he was going to fall down on the job, right? So again, this is why mediation is so effective, because that's not something judges typically do. But that is something that you can sit down and figure out. And that's why, especially with my coaching clients, the first thing I do is say, forget about your anger. Forget about the fact your wife wants a divorce. Because that's usually the guys I coach are the ones that their wives have said, I want a divorce, and they don't want to be divorced. Okay, you're upset. Your number one goal is to do everything in your power to convince her that you want an amicable, inexpensive, creative process to put together a settlement, and that you want to go to a mediator. And let her choose the mediator for all I care. You want to go to a mediator and you want to try to convince her not to lawyer up and file something with the court and go that direction. And I'm like, if you can do that, you are already so much better off than you would be in any other situation. And so that's if you want to ask my primary goal in coaching, it's to convince people to help their spouse come along to what I believe is the best path forward when you're getting divorced, which is mediation.
Yes. And in mediation, I have to tell you that the moments that warm my heart and that make me see that it's all so very worth it at its core is when people become honest. You know, honesty, self-awareness is, you can't live without it. And especially in divorce, blame is pointless. Everything is in the past, it's done. we have got to look at the present and the future and see what we can do to be the best we can. I have seen apologies melt the coldest heart. How do you deal with honesty and self-awareness in your mentoring and coaching programs?
Well, in the coaching program, most men are very honest because they, at the beginning, almost to a man, they've never been in therapy before. They've never seen a psychologist. In a lot of situations, I'm the first person they're pouring their heart out to. I joke that a lot of men I work with, I'm the first person they've cried in front of in quite some time, if ever. And so I don't feel like honesty is all that difficult to get people in the coaching. They might be dishonest about what their goals are because their perception of what they really want is being obscured to some degree by what they think is going to happen. I've noticed that quite a bit. This goes back to custody. You know, they think they're going to lose, they're not going to have their kids enough. They're willing to tell me that they would agree to just about anything when I know in their heart that's not the case. So that's really the dishonesty I get a lot more. But I was going to tell you when I do mediation, you'll appreciate this. I have a three Pinocchio rule, which means in mediation, if I find out either person has lied to me three times, mediation's done. I kick the mouth out, I'm done.
Oh my gosh.
Because, you know, it is, and I actually have little Pinocchio emojis. And because I do a lot of caucusing. I don't know how you do mediation, but I do a lot of caucusing just because I've always found that it promotes people to be a little bit more honest about what they want. And so I don't ever tell the other person, you know, that I've detected that they've been lying to me. But, you know, after you've done this for a while, it becomes very easy to see when someone's lying to you or being less than honest.
Without a doubt. And caucusing, caucus means you put the people in separate rooms and the mediator goes back and forth and carries the proposals back and forth and helps each person have clarity when they go to say, this is my decision, right?
Okay. Right. Because a lot of times if you don't do that, one person will monopolize the conversation and the other one has a lot to say, but doesn't feel comfortable saying it. Yeah. But I always tell people this, you'll tell me, you know, 30 minutes worth of information in the separate caucus. I really, out of that 30 minutes, only about 2 minutes is actually worthy of being brought over to the other side. So really, it's a good way to just distill it down to what's important so that we can get to the bottom of things because you're there to reach an agreement. You're not there for therapy. You're not there to air all your grievances. You're not there for any of those things. It's just, listen, the marriage is over. It's a sad time, but let's figure out how to make the most of it. Or what's the alternative? You each spend $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 on legal fees that will do nothing but create a worse environment for you to co-parent. It'll create a worse environment for your bank account. You're taking money out of your kids' college funds, whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. So really, but going back to your point about being honest, everything you do in a divorce requires honesty. I always think it's entertaining when I have divorce clients where I'm not doing mediation, but I'm actually representing them, who still lie to me. I'm like, I'm your attorney. Why are you lying to me? Are you afraid that I'm going to tell somebody your lie? Because all that's going to happen is if a judge finds out you're lying, it's going to make it that much harder for me to represent you. And people just think that if they lie, they're going to be able to get away with it. There's this perception in the world these days that the lying's okay, that you can lie. If you say something enough, it's going to be the truth. But when you go through a divorce process, whether you're working with a coach, mediator, whether you're in litigation in front of a judge, the truth will always come out. And if you lie, it's just going to make it worse for you. And that's really the most important thing. I will tell you, I'll finish off with this to this point, Judith, that litigation clients, if I find out you lied to me, we're no longer working together. And I say that up front. I say that at the very beginning. I said, listen, you will tell me everything. There's privilege. I can't tell anybody. But if I find out you lied to me or you didn't disclose something to me that is very important, like, oh, I don't know, that you're doing drugs and you want me to fight for custody, but you didn't tell me that you're a drug user. That's an example that's occurred more than once in my career. We're done. You can go somewhere else. There's plenty of attorneys out there that, you know, don't have the same moral standards that I do and the same ethical standards I do. But really, at the end of the day, honesty is so important, regardless of what direction you start this journey in.
That was so refreshing to hear you say that. It is so very important. First of all, just for your own health and welfare, the individual's health and welfare. You can't be living a life that isn't real. And yes, you are jeopardizing the attorney's ability to even work for you correctly, embarrass the attorney in court. I mean, it's all wrong. On every level, it's all wrong. So I'm really happy to hear you say that. Let's go to, because this is the other fear. This is where men feel that they're going to get screwed. It's financially. Whether it's with, do you use alimony as opposed to spousal support in New Jersey?
Yes, we do in New Jersey, but since I coach men nationwide, they call it maintenance some places, spousal support some places, alimony some places. So, you know, I think most people use those words interchangeably anyway. So I think almost everyone knows what alimony is thanks to popular culture and movies in California. So,
yes, it does. So that is the other area of serious fear. Correct? How am I going to live? What if it was only a one income household at the point of divorce and a man makes 60, 80,000 and has two or three kids? Wife doesn't work yet. How do you deal with this?
This is the hardest part of any divorce. Most people think it's custody. I'll tell you, by and large, it's really alimony because assets are usually split equally. You know, regardless of whether you live in a state where it's community property or whether you live in a state where they use some kind of equitable distribution, it's usually 50-50, regardless. It's really just a matter of, is there things that we're going to exclude? But when it comes to alimony, what's really difficult is that it is no fault almost everywhere in the country. So people get stuck at the beginning that if my wife's the one that wants a divorce, or my husband's the one that cheated on me, a lot of people can't get over the fact that that does not go into the alimony conversation to begin with.
What do you mean by no fault? You said no fault.
So no fault meaning that it doesn't really matter why you're getting divorced. The issue of alimony is one of finances. It's one of need, ability to pay. It's one of marital lifestyle. It's one of getting somebody on their feet post-divorce. It really doesn't have anything to do with why you're getting divorced. And a lot of people can't get past that. I hear from my coaching clients a lot, well, John, why would I have to pay alimony if she's the one that wants the divorce? She decided not to work. You hear all those things because people don't want to acknowledge, just like with custody, that post-divorce and during your marriage are two completely separate situations and you can't conflate the two. The only thing that's relevant to alimony is you lived a certain way, people have certain incomes, and we have to figure out we'll say a wife stayed home, just because even though I don't like to stereotype, that's still most of the time what happens. How long will it take her to get to a point where she's self-sufficient? And it becomes very hard. You know, you've got a guy making 60 grand, particularly if they're living in Southern California, where you are in New Jersey, where I am. If you know, they're only making 60 grand and they have two kids, and let's say wife hasn't worked in 15 years and she doesn't have any education or experience, I mean, what is the most she could even possibly make? All right. And if she makes that and she has to go work 40 hours a week, what are you going to do with the kids? They're going to need childcare. That's going to eat into what she can earn. You know, people just look at things from the 40,000 foot view and forget that there's real life consequences to everything we're talking about. And really, it boils down to budgets. I really am a big proponent of don't talk about formulas and, you know, I have to pay this much or that much. Look at a budget. Actually try to figure out what it's going to mean in the world, what it's going to mean in reality. And people lose sight of that. They have those gut reactions. I want, you know, that's not enough alimony. That's too much alimony. I shouldn't have to pay that. And they haven't even done any form of budget. They haven't even actually looked at what their life's going to look like. They haven't tried to figure out, can I reduce my costs somewhere?
Or wait a minute. Okay, I'll take that for alimony, but can you also pay the Range Rover? Can you also pay this and that? And they don't understand. Well, no, you have to pay all of that on what you make for a living, or, and, you know, coupled with alimony and maybe child support. Sorry about that.
No, the one thing that really irritates me, and I, you know, in our conversation, try not to use my biases too much, but alimony, particularly in New Jersey, New York, California, is very different from alimony in like the southern tier of states, Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia.
How different?
It's very, well, down in a lot of those states, it's very difficult to even get alimony.
You're
at
kidding.
All. There are certain states where you have to have been married for a certain length of time to even qualify. Texas, it's 10 years. And then there's no such thing as permanent alimony anywhere, or unlimited duration, or whatever it's called in the state where you are. It's really interesting that how women are taken a little bit more care of. I say women again because it's typically who's receiving alimony, although that is changing a little bit more in recent years. How much better off they are in certain states and how much worse off they are in other states. But strangely enough, there have been studies that the long-term 5-10 years out after divorce, they're really in similar situations. And so I've never really quite understood that, except that there are people out there that do receive alimony who don't have the incentive to go out and really try to maximize their own earning potential, because they think, okay, well, I'm entitled to this because during the marriage I didn't have to work, so why should I have to work now? And that goes back to whatever happened during the marriage is irrelevant to what's going to happen after the marriage. Again, it's like a bridge. We're just trying to create a bridge to get you to post-divorce life. And that's where I think alimony has kind of run off the rails in certain places. It's that we've created a situation where it's almost punitive, where people are having to pay these. I mean, I know people that were married for 14 years that got hit with permanent alimony awards. I mean, I don't understand why someone who was married for 14 years should be paying alimony for 20 years. It just intellectually doesn't make any sense. So it's a really interesting philosophy, but you've got people that know all of this, that have seen all of this, and it is so hard to get them back where they need to be. Whether it's, I should get alimony because, you know, he was able to go off and work and I had to stay home with the kids, which is a legitimate issue, versus the alimony where one person made 100 and one person made 50, and now you're paying alimony based on that disparity, without the person who made a little bit less having the same motivation to try to increase their earnings. Alimony has become a situation where it really pits people against each other. And men are scared that they're going to have to pay these insane amounts of alimony, but they also don't recognize that there are a lot of people they were married to who need it to get by to the next stage. And so it is probably more difficult than custody. I know we talked about custody for a while.
Right.
I feel like alimony is much more difficult to get them to understand why they're paying it or why they're only receiving this amount. And if you don't explain to people the why, they just get stuck on, I want more. No, I want more. That's the society we're in right now. I want more. I want more.
Well, right.
Why?
Well, okay, two things. I like to tell people how we use spousal support in California, but I like to tell people where that idea of supporting the wife came from. And I did research. It came from the 1800s when women just didn't work. There were no jobs for women except for Miss Kitty in the saloon and Gunsmoke. So there were those jobs. And I think Miss Kitty made a very good living and she looked really happy to me. But in a situation where long-term marriage, children are all grown, man takes off with his secretary. Now there's no jobs for women unless they want to go work with Miss Kitty. And so that's where spousal support came from so that she wouldn't be destitute. Okay, so now you fast forward to modern times where you still have, in some situations, the ability for a woman to be, and I'm going to use my sister-in-law's term, a professional mother, and I'm going to do a little devil's advocate on this as well. So my brother makes a substantial living, and he wanted the traditional marriage. They're married. They're not getting divorced, by the way. But I'm just going to use them as an example where if one spouse, generally it is the man who will say, honey, stay home. I would love for the kids to have you at home when they come back, going to school, come back from school. You know, you can help them with the activities, all this thing. Okay, that's great. My mother did that. And I will make enough money. So you take care of the domestic side of our family. I will take care of the financial side of our family. Now, and maybe it could be a fairly long-term marriage, anything over 10 years in California is considered long-term, but it's still subjective. Is 11 years the same as 20 years? I mean, you still have to weigh these numbers. So now you're getting divorced, and some men will say, no, I know I'm going to pay spousal support, that's okay, but can we talk about when you might go back to work? Or, depending on age, can go back to work? So there's that conversation. Or, hey, listen, I took care of you for all these years. I don't see why you can't just go out and get a job. Well, it's not that simple. That's where I'm going to become devil's advocate. If you haven't been in the workforce in forever, 15 years, no, you can't just go back to work. Maybe if you're extremely enterprising and have no fear, but you have fear entering the workforce. And then it's not like when I grew up, John, where you could look in the newspaper and there would be really good job ads and a phone number that somebody would answer that you could talk to and be interviewed by. No, you have to go on Monster and Align and Indeed, and you're one of millions of people. And it's like, I am so happy I don't have to do that. So how do you counsel men with that bridge that you talked about and the understanding that you got to give your wife a break here for a minute to catch up? Yes?
No? Yes, absolutely. I will tell you, the people that need alimony legitimately, I am the fiercest advocate for it, not just because in my career I've represented probably equal numbers of men and women, but it really, and what I try to explain to men is, listen, if you don't want to do it for her, do it for your children. You want to make sure that they have a good home, that they, you know, that your ex-wife's going to have enough money to provide this home, because child support isn't covering it. Child support's covering maybe their room and food, but it's not covering the type of lifestyle that they're going to have. And, you know, in New Jersey, we have a principle that children are entitled to live a lifestyle commensurate with both parents, which is why if one parent is making millions of dollars, the other parent will get incidental benefits because you're allowing them to have more money to have a nicer house. So the kids aren't going from, you know, a one-bedroom apartment at mom's house to a palatial mansion at dad's house. We don't want that. So, but you go back to alimony. I tell men all the time, listen, if I see a disparity in income, in New Jersey, it doesn't matter how long you're married. You'll be married 4 years. It doesn't matter. Disparity in income, you're going to pay some alimony. Go ahead, internalize that. Go scream in the car, turn up the music, pound something. You're going to pay alimony. So let's just start with that. So really, it's going to be we're going to just try to mitigate it as much as possible, create a plan, and let's actually present a plan to your soon-to-be ex-wife of, listen, we want to help you get to the point where you can be self-sufficient. How long is that going to be? How much do I need to give you and for how long? Because I feel like if men know that it's only going to last X amount of time, they can swallow that and understand it better than these permanent, it's never going to end, because that, again, it goes back to what I said a minute ago. That's so hard, even for people that have been doing this for so long. It's very difficult to understand how in a lot of situations that really is the fair result. Because, I mean, what happens when kids go away to college and you don't have any child responsibilities anymore? Does that mean you don't have any obligation to go out and try to get a job? And yes, that might mean you need to go back to college, you know, in your 40s or your 50s. It's never going to be easy, but guess what? You're not married anymore. It's a different reality. And then with men, the other concern they always have is, and I don't know how it is in California, but New Jersey, it's really difficult to get modifications of support. And that's really the other part of this, is that particularly we just went through in 2008 and 9, the recession, then we just went through the COVID situation, which I guess we're still in. It's really difficult for people to stomach the fact that, okay, I lost my job, I'm unemployed, or I'm on temporary unemployment, and I'm still paying these sums of alimony. So there's, you know, this could be like three different podcasts all, you know, talking about this, but really it goes back to creating the right set of expectations at the very beginning, making them understand that alimony is going to happen or spousal support is going to happen. Let's just talk about what's the most fair thing for both of you. And guess what? It's going to be less than she wants and more than he wants to pay, always. So you start with that principle and you try to come up with a creative solution. I use that word constantly. In fact, my law firm's name is New Jersey Divorce Solutions, because we try to find a solution to your problem, not just, you know. That's, you know, great. So it's, yeah, yeah. We came up with that a couple of years ago, because New Jersey would just allow trade names in recent years. We've been behind the times. It used to be you had to be, you know, Smith and Jones attorneys, right, at law. So they changed it. But really, if you just look at it as a collaborative process, that we're just trying to find the situation. And guess what? You live in a state where spousal support or alimony is available and it's going to happen. Then I think you can get past that anger part that so many people find themselves in and move on to finding those solutions. And that's what my principal goal is when I start working with men coaching, is just to get them to that place so that I can hand them off to an attorney that can actually advise them in that state, what is it that we can get done for you? Because that's, you got to send people off with the right mindset. Otherwise, it's going to be the battle. It's going to be, you cheated on me, you wanted the divorce, why should I have to pay alimony? A lot of people can't get past that.
I understand. I really understand. And that is why going through the emotional divorce is so important before you start the legal divorce. You have to grieve. You have to be angry. You have to process life isn't fair. You have to go through all of these different Elizabeth Kubler-Ross death stages. And then there's a couple more for divorce, by the way. I think there's 9 stages of grief for divorce and only 7 for death, which losing a loved one, which I thought was really interesting, because the divorce can live on if you don't use it as a growth experience. And that's something else I like to talk about, is we are all going to run into tough situations in our life, hopes and dreams dashed. Yes, it hurts, but if we can use it as a growth experience, we will come out so much better than if we don't. And, you know, just let's go through the grieving and then let's deal with it. John, I have to read some of your topics to the audience that I love more than anything. And so here are 3. Cell phones and divorce prep. Build evidence that can make a huge difference. Mind, body, and divorce. What a combination. Signs that divorce is coming. And then there was one that really caught my eye, and it was just a general topic, and it was, why don't things settle? And I thought, God, now this is great, because why don't things settle? Generally, emotionally, the emotions have it right. The emotions haven't been dealt with yet. So nothing's going to settle until the emotions are dealt with. I just got done with 7 mediations for one couple, and they had to go to attorneys because there were these emotional issues that were ever present in the mediation. They each really wanted to move on, but they couldn't because they each had their own issues. And his was control. He was in a very high-powered career, and he was used to having control. It was very difficult for him to compromise, but I think he had a good heart. I could see that coming out. He wanted to be generous, and he was giving more than he had to, and he knew it. And I was like, yeah, I'm really proud of you. She was scared to death of being homeless, although she made $120,000 a year. She came from poverty, so I understood that, which is why you do have to let the backstory come out a little bit. But she was asking for more and more and more and more, well beyond what the law would allow. And at one point I just said, and she wanted control back in her life. So he was exercising control because that's what he knew. And she wanted to be free of control. And this goes to anybody. I'm using this as a general example, that the more you ask for, the more you give up control. And you don't see it. You think that what you're asking for, and you get it, that immediate gratification, puts you in control. But you've really given up control if you are asking for more than the law allows and are not assuming your own level of control by, thank you, I appreciate that you want to give me more. I'm going to deal with what I'm supposed to get or what the law allows. Think of what that would do in a mediation. No, thank you. I appreciate you're generous, but let's just deal with what the law allows. I've never seen that happen, by the way. Have you?
I don't think I have either, but you're... I agree with everything you just were saying. It's very interesting how mediators are all very different the way that we do it. And one thing that I really love to do is to get both persons' position on something before anyone even knows what the other one even wants. Because what I do is, you know, if wife says I want $250 a week in alimony, and husband's like, I only want to pay $150 a week. And I can see in my mind, you know, as an attorney, I see in my mind that a reasonable resolution, if they had come into me for a consultation outside of mediation, just, you know, as an attorney, if I had thought, okay, somewhere around 200 would be the right number, what I typically do, just so that they don't feel like one's asking for more and more, I'll just try to get them both to that middle place, kind of without ever telling the other one what they even were asking for to begin with. Yes. And that's why talking to people separately in mediation is so effective, because sometimes you can get them to settle without the other person even knowing what they started at. And, you know, and that's really where you talk about emotions. Keeping emotions out of divorce is the singular hardest thing to do.
It's an oxymoron almost, right?
Exactly. But you just have to tell people, listen, go see a therapist, go have drinks with your friends, go talk to a coach, you know, go on a vacation, go to yoga.
Goat yoga, especially.
Oh, really?
Have you ever heard of goat yoga?
No, I haven't.
Oh my God. Well, it's very popular in Los Angeles. Let me tell you, they have goats walking around in the yoga area, and they walk on you on different positions, and it's just so much fun. But I digress. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, it really is so important that they just understand that they need to keep the emotions out of it. And I really tell everyone when they sit down, either in my office if I'm their attorney, or in mediation, or even in the coaching world, that this is literally like going and buying a car. You know how buying a car, you're negotiating usually with this manager somewhere out the back door?
Beyond
exactly. It's very similar. It's very similar, and you've got to look at it as a business transaction. And that's what it is. And you may get upset. Like I tell people, I'm like, remember when you were buying the car and the manager, you know, whoever it was that was, you know, your salesperson kept going and talking to, how they said, oh no, I can't go above this amount. We can't get it down to this amount. And you have you're upset because you really don't think you should be paying that much. At some point you have to decide, do you want the car? And in this case, it's, do you want the divorce? Do you want this process to be over with? And sometimes it really is just a matter of recognizing that you're not going to like the price you're paying, but the result is what you're going for. And that's why being goal-oriented and result-oriented is such a positive development in both mediation and in pre-divorce counseling, just to be sure you're clear on what it is you really want. Because otherwise, you let your emotions take over and it's a, I said this before, but my husband cheated on me. He needs to pay more alimony. We wouldn't be getting divorced, but the fact that he cheated on me, or my wife's the one that wants the divorce. Why should I have to pay anything? Because if you can't just see that you're going to be paying something or you're going to be receiving something that's less than what you want, you can't get past that. You're going to be like the couple that you were just speaking of. You're going to go to mediation and waste months of your life or weeks of your life, and you're going to end up going to attorneys and spend another couple years of your life
I know. I don't want to leave until I mention your programs because I love the programs that you offer. So here's what they are. What the hell do I want VIP session? You can expound for a second, but let me just get through them. The men's Get Divorced Without Getting Screwed game planning program. I mean, they're just fun topics. But listening to you talk, you have a heart and you want things to work for both people. Here's another one. The men's Get Me Through the Divorce mentoring program. Just get me through the divorce. And then we'll finish up with the small group coaching, because it is good to listen to other people. Even when you're in a coaching or mentoring one-on-one relationship, you still don't have other voices, and misery does love company. We do like to share, spread our misery around, but it helps to say, okay, I'm not the only one, and listen to how other people are coming up with their creative solutions. So, John, how did you come to these topics? I love these mentoring program topics.
So it was actually a combination of things. So obviously, I've been divorcing men for a long time, so I sort of already knew what they needed. I also started a private Facebook group that got up to almost 1,000 men, where I was watching the topics. I was watching what they were talking about and what they really needed. And I would have free coaching sessions where I just have a bunch of guys on Zoom and listen to them. So really, I just got to the point where I recognized what people need. And for example, there's a lot of guys that just can't get past the, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to me? And that's where I came up with the, what the hell do I want session? Because it's sometimes people need, as funny as it sounds, they need literally 4 hours of me just smacking them across the face. I'm really not joking. Sometimes that's what they need and they can't get past it. I can't even get them to the conversations we've been talking about if they can't even recognize this is going to happen. You're not going to convince her to change her mind. She's not going to wake up tomorrow and just all of a sudden decide she doesn't want to get divorced. And, you know, but I've been this great person. I've provided all these things. Why? Because men don't understand that a lot of women, they think about it for a long time and now they're ready. So sometimes I tell them, listen, you've got to come a long ways in a very short amount of time. So that's why we got to get this done. So, and the rest of the programs are really meant for either planning, like really practical planning, you know, trying to get them through, you know, as funny as it sounds, Judith, like who are your children's friends? Who are their teachers? You know, who are their doctors? You know, what are their schedules? Make sure you understand everything.
You're right. Because that's one of the things that comes up with women. And I get it. And that is, how many parent-teacher conferences have you missed? You don't even know who their teachers are. You don't know when the soccer game is. You don't know this, you don't know that. And it does sound kind of sad, but okay, time to get up to speed because you're going to have to know these things. You may have on your co-parenting day a ballet show, a ballet lesson that you're going to have to go to.
You absolutely. And also, I mean, there's those practical things, but also you don't want the other parent to be making custody arguments about you just because you don't know a name. You know, well, look, he doesn't even know who my child's best friend's mother is. So I like to, you know, do those things. And then you go through some practical money things. You know, have you actually, you know, most people don't have a list of their assets or their debt or their budget. You know, like trying to get those things put together so you just sort of understand what reality is. We were talking about one of my blogs earlier about recording. It's one of my biggest issues. And I do this with men in New Jersey too. And I'll just put a little disclaimer. There are certain states in the country where you have to have two people's consent to record. So if you're ever going to record somebody, make sure that you know the laws of your state. Hmm. But if you can record without your spouse knowing, it is the easiest way to keep you out of trouble, particularly when it comes to allegations of domestic violence, because there are a lot of people in this world that will use that as a sword instead of a shield. And so I'm really just a big advocate of making sure that you're protecting yourself. And then it's really your body and mind. A lot of guys will go through a divorce and, you know, they will just not take care of themselves. They'll start eating bad. They'll not exercise. They'll drink too much, whatever. And it just creates a toxic environment for them to think clearly because they're just not taking care of themselves. So I look at it as a holistic approach. And that's why recently I started another forum. It's called the mensdivorcenetwork.com. And it's really just bringing guys together to have those conversations on a daily basis. Men will come on, they'll ask a question, I'm going through this, and everyone gives their own opinion, including me. I'll come on and give opinions too. But just providing those forums for men to come on and ask their questions, know they're not alone, has made a world of difference in so many of these guys. I mean, it's so interesting seeing how so many of them have started versus where they've ended up. A lot of them aren't angry. They're, you know, they're almost happy. Because that's my end goal, is that you recognize this being the end of the beginning, not the beginning of the end of your life, that this has happened. You have a next chapter. You're going to write it. Move on. Understand you love this person. You had kids with them. They provided so many good things for you. They made the person you are today. Okay, let's move on to the next chapter of our life. And all the guys I've coached, if I've gotten them to that point where they are at least able to be content about the next thing that's going to happen to them, then I feel like I did my job, regardless of how their divorce turned out. Because, you know, some people settle for things that, you know, as an attorney, I would watch them and be like, oh, I can't have you settle for that. But that's why mediation and settlement is for you to say what you want. And if you're comfortable with paying more or receiving less than what the law says you should get, then fine. Because it's all about making you feel as content as possible so that you can move on in your life.
And that feeling of contentment will come from, and this is where I think mediators have to really keep this forefront, and that is the reason for the divorce is the backdrop to the negotiation. And somebody may feel really guilty. And the way they deal with that guilt is by providing more. And so that's why with me as a mediator, I'm not an attorney, so I can't give advice. But as a mediator, I really hold myself back and I listen hard if there's a reason given or for giving more or just a consistent statement. No, this is what I want. I've thought about this. This is okay. Well, if you've thought about it, this is what you want. This is great. Because you never know what happened in the background. And we all have to be sensitive, I think, in that regard. John, we could go on for a while because I really enjoy talking with you. And I'm so very happy to have met you. I'm happy that you have your coaching, your law practice, and now the network. So could you please give people the way they can get in touch with you as we end?
Absolutely. Thank you, Judith, for having me. This has been a great conversation. People can email me. It's john@thedivorceshield.com. And if there are any men out there that are, you know, feeling lost and they would like a community of other men to talk to for absolutely for free, just go to mensdivorcenetwork.com and you can sign on. My only rule is I do not allow any women on the site. And it's for the reasons we've been talking about before, just provide that safe place for men to be able to come and not feel like they're going to be judged. Whether they are or not, it's not the issue. I like to provide that really safe place. But those are the two main ways you can reach me.
And I would like to add a footnote to this. I'm a woman, and I felt quite comfortable in your approach to divorce. I get that you want a safe place for men, not a place for men to screw women.
Absolutely.
I want to make that very clear to everybody listening that I'm very comfortable in it, when I talk to you, just to get to know you, and in this episode that we're doing together, this talk, that yes, you're very much for balance for everybody. So
yeah, just again, you should never, no one should ever get screwed in a divorce. And I always say getting screwed is a subjective term anyway, right? Some people think if they have to pay $1, they're getting screwed. But really everyone, it should be a fair result. You know, you've probably heard people say it, a good settlement's where everyone's upset. I don't really subscribe to that, but really.
Nor do I. I think a good settlement is when both people are happy.
I've heard many a judge say it over the years. But, you know, at the end of the day, it really should be something that everyone can walk away from and just look at it and say, that's fair. And if that's the result, that's really what's important. And again, to get there, you have to address mindset. And that's really what my goal is with these guys.
Well, thank you very much, John, of the Divorce Shield. It was my pleasure and honor to have you on today. Thank you so much. And thank all of you for listening. Please share this podcast with your friends, subscribe, and you can get in touch with me with any comments or suggestions for topics at theamicabledivorceexpert.com, theamicabledivorceexpert.com. And as always, have an amicable day.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Be good to yourselves, be kind to your spouse, and cherish your children above all else.